This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joe Madden joins us weekly to talk about all things Cubs and sometimes some other things as well. And he is on Twitter at Cubs Joe Mad with two Ds, and he's on the Bernstein and McKnight show. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Wonderfully. Nice to hear some of the comments about our brand new sports landscape you made the other day. Sports betting is what's all the rage the last 2 days. The show, really, Dan, and my show has been just about sports betting, and I thought it was pretty funny the way you put it. It's kind of always been going on to you.
Oh, it has. I mean, that's not just to me. I mean, look around. I think Vegas has been there for a bit. If you want to place a bet in Vegas, you could have done it for the last, I don't know how many years. In everybody's hometown, there's always some kind of action going on somewhere. I mean, I don't understand why it's such a big deal, except that maybe those that had the monopoly on it are kind of upset otherwise. I think it's going to regulate itself rather quickly. I think it's going to, just like off-track betting became just another thing. Back in the day, at first, it's always viewed to be this game changer. It just makes it easier for those that like to gamble to gamble. It's not going to impact our game, I don't believe. Like I said, it's been there. If anybody wanted to infiltrate, they could have done it. But I just don't buy all those arguments. It just makes it easier for people to bet. It permits other states to get in on the tax money, and that's how I see it.
Is it, you know, because baseball has always had that stigma of, you know, whether it's Pete Rose or going back years before it, bettors influencing the game in little pockets here or there. Doesn't seem like you're worried about that at all, and that it kind of, I don't know, in your opinion, does it police itself essentially?
I think it makes it even more unlikely, the fact that it's legal. And so because of that, it should be controlled, regulated, watched more closely. So why wouldn't you think that it's more, again, watched, policed, however you want to describe it, mm-hmm. as opposed to having it be illegal where it's easier to maybe subvert. So it's like a lot of other things, man. I think once you give it an opportunity to play, you'll find out exactly what you got. But it's not like it's not been legal. It's not like prohibition has been overturned. Gambling's been legal, and it's been legal in a lot of places. So all of a sudden now you could gamble somewhere in Iowa. Who cares? It's all over the place.
Have you ever, as a manager at any level in the minors, ever had to have a talk with a player who maybe you found out was not necessarily betting on baseball, but maybe had a gambling issue? I mean, we know that people are prone, some have a problem, and there's some, especially at the minor league level, when you can barely get a peanut butter sandwich for lunch, there might be some temptation there to take that per diem and maybe go to a boat or something. Have you ever had to talk to a team and say, look, let's not do this?
Not at all. Not at all. I remember back in the day, I played for the Salinas Angels. We're in Reno, and that's where I met Harry Dalton, the GM of the Angels, at a crap table. Legal. You know, so I think a lot is made of nothing a lot of these times. It makes for great conversation. Those that are just opposed to gambling or those that have vested interests regarding other groups not being able to do this, that's where you're going to hear the most noise. It's just another method of lobbying, regardless of where it comes from. It just is. So I see it as a push. I think it's something that was going to eventually be done anyway. It just happened to be done in May of 2018, and then you just move on.
Why is baseball picking on Ben Zobrist of all people? I mean, this
wow.
The 37-year-old veteran and a World Series MVP. I understand the concept behind uniforms. And then we found out today Wilson Contreras can't wear his Venezuelan flag arm sleeve. What's really going on here?
I have no idea. Honestly, I don't. I don't. I really don't. And again, it's one of those superfluous situations for me that I don't pay a whole lot of attention to. I mean, I, of all people, who does not have a dress code with my team, you know. It's one of those things. I understand uniforms. I do, and I think we wear a uniform every day. I know we do. There's all these dress up methods or the ability to accessorize, I guess. But I have no strong opinions. I let that up to MLB. I just know that Zoe's going to have strong opinions, and that's – listen, I want all my guys to have strong opinions. I love that about them. They're free thinkers. I don't inhibit the way they think. these are the kind of things that I stay out of because I have – unless it, you know, involves me directly and I need to talk about it. But of course, if you're going to pick a fight with Zoe, he's going to tell you exactly what he's thinking and why he's done it. And I promise you it's going to be well thought out. And there's nothing but pure intentions on his part. And with the arm sleeve, I had no idea about that either. And I'm certain that they will rule on this precisely soon. But I had no idea we were breaking the rules there.
So you guys will have Yu Darvish coming off the disabled list today against the Braves, and in kind of a big spot in your rotation, given the way the last few days have gone. You mentioned after a game about how much you've had to put on the bullpen, how many innings you've had to ask out of him because of some short starts from some of the starters. So you walks into a place today where you're asking for a little depth coming off the disabled list like this.
Yeah. Well, actually, disabled list, not that his arm was injured. He had been ill. And you know, actually, people that were making anything of that, Chase Anderson in Milwaukee had to do the same thing because of an illness. And again, realize 10-day DLs permit this to happen. It has nothing to do with a person's character and makeup. It helps the team stay strong while somebody's getting well. That's it. So he's not like he is out of shape physically or arm strength wise. So he's on his normal numbers. He pitches well. He's going to get his 110 pitches if that's what it takes. Looking forward to him really starting to nail it down. Like all these guys, the good part about all of this is that a lot of our starters have not been as consistent as they're capable, and we're still in pretty good shape because I know they're going to become consistent. You, one of the best arms I've ever been on the field with. So let's just keep moving it forward. I have a lot of faith in this guy. He's going to start nailing it down, and that's it. I mean, when you're on the field, when you've scouted, when you've been doing this for several years, you know talent when you see it, and this guy is among the best arms, like I said, I've seen. So just give him a little time to get his feet on the ground, get everything going in the right direction. But I'm eager to watch him play tonight. Listen, of course he has not pitched up to his capabilities, but he will.
Fans have high expectations for Yu Darvish, and in large part they know the price tag that the team paid for him. Fans have high expectations for Jose Quintana. They know the price in trade, and more so every day as the big name is headed toward the major leagues. I'm trying to find out, when it comes to the pressure and some of these starts, what is real and what is not. What we are projecting, or what a fan's feelings may be projecting on an actual person or situation. What is real? How much of the size or heft of each of these individual starts feels that way to you or to the pitcher involved?
I actually read a great quote back in it. It might have been, what was the quarterback from Notre Dame? Was there a Clemens that played quarterback at Notre Dame?
Yeah, Tom Clemens. He became an offensive coordinator and worked with the Packers, right?
I'm almost certain it comes from him that, and I think I'm right, but I'm not 100% sure, that pressure is self-inflicted. I've always loved that phrase. And, you know, I've remembered it, and I think it was from him. But anyway, I think in general that's true. You know, we all could feel the pressures of the universe coming at us from all different directions, whether it's fans or your parents or girlfriend, whatever, your boss. There's all this stuff that's pressing back at us. But at the same time, you know, when you, as accomplished as these guys are athletically speaking, it's just a matter of them getting comfortable and getting out there and starting to feel. Believe me, man, when it comes to a pitcher, it's in the fingertips. When you feel where that ball is going, you know where it's going, and you have confidence in where it's going, all of a sudden you pitch up to your capabilities. Now, if you're not capable of being as good as Quintana or Darvish, then of course that's an unexpected result. But these guys are really good. So I just want them to know that I have confidence in them and that they need to go out there and just really, you know, kind of like grind, work through all these whatever issues they may be having. But at the end of the day, what you feel out there is self-inflicted. It's whether good or bad. And that's why, you know, when you incorporate even sports psychologists as an example, and you talk about routine, sometimes you have to rely on routine more to stay in the moment and stay focused on the task at hand and not let things spiral or spin too quickly. We all do it. You've done it. I've done it. We've all done it. And whatever this little mechanism that we have, the difference is they got to do it in front of 40 or 50,000 people. So these are learned experiences or moments or skills. And so these guys, as they get that feel back, and they're able to really focus on the target only, and this other stuff just becomes white noise, that's when they're going to start really nailing it down.
Maybe the topic here is a little bit more grand than one start, and it should be. Pressure is this giant thing that looms over everybody. But do you feel that, you know, in general, Joe, that because of the way the game works now, because of pitch counts, and because, you know, you're going to the bullpen quicker in general, that pitchers maybe don't get a chance, whether they're coming up through the minor leagues or early on in the major leagues careers, to pitch through some of those issues, to have that moment out of the mound where things do fall apart, and then they've got to regain some of that, whether it's composure or stuff or in-game presence?
Yeah, I mean, I that's a really and actually a great point. I think that really does belong in the minor leagues. I think we are way too protective sometimes. I mean, I do believe in protecting the pitcher, absolutely, especially the young guys. It just seems when they're really young, that's when they're prone to break down, and you got to watch over it. But I remember specifically doing what you're talking about. I got a nice young pitcher out there in the mound in the minor leagues. He's getting in some jams. Let him go. Let him go. Let him try to figure out how to get through this moment. You're absolutely correct. On a major league level, it's always a little bit more difficult, but you're talking about guys with cachet here, whether it's Quintana or Darvish or whomever. These guys have been around a bit, and they've been through different adversities, and they've come through it on the other side. So pitch counts, I know there's so much made of all this stuff, but 100, 110, 15 pitches at the most, whatever, that's a nice day's work. And what people don't realize, it's not just about that game. And it might not just be about the next game, but how about the one after that? I learned that in the big leagues, even in the 90s, when I was around some really good old-school kind of pitchers like a Chuck Finley as an example, or Mark Langston, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It might not just be about that game. It might could be the next or the one after that things really fall apart. So when you're trying to build this extension bridge of sorts, you got to be mindful of all this stuff because, yeah, you want to win today, but, of course, you want to win down the road consistently and have this guy be able to send his kids to good colleges. So I'm really aware of all that stuff. I think like a nice, you know, 105 to 110 is a good number for an established pitcher that pitches on a consistent basis for years. And then you're going to have Scherzer or Verlander or Nolan Ryan, whatever. There's always anomaly guys, but you can't. That's why I always talk about different buckets, man. You know some guys that are good about 90, get them out. You know some guys 105, get them out. And there's other guys you can stretch farther, and you just got to know your audience.
We were talking with Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs earlier on, and he was noting that one common thread that Cubs pitchers are dealing with right now, it just so happens that the two teams that just played, the Cubs and the White Sox, are both at the very bottom of the league right now in framing runs, as that is measured, the number of pitches that are grabbed around the periphery to fool umpires, for lack of a better term. Is that of concern to you? Is that something that you want to be better, or is this just a nature of guys like Darvish and Chatwood who have styles that don't necessarily lend themselves to being easily framed?
Well, you know, there are some catchers that really do hold edges well, and I'm sure that if you talk to any umpire, they're going to be offended by that thought because they're supposed to call the ball or cross the plate regardless. A catcher that should get edges well is the guy that moves less movements with his glove. And if you can imagine, if we're going to do a clinic right now, like a solo cup, the one with the pointy bottom and the rounded top. If you could imagine the rounded cup, part of the cup, that's the edges of the strike zone, and everything comes back to the point in your chest. So the guy that can get, again, above the ball on the high ball, outside the ball, on either to his left or to his right, just imagine outside. And honestly, there's a concept of getting lower than the ball mentally on the ball down. I totally believe in that concept where you really, when you know the ball is going to be down, you're calling for the ball to be down. You got to get your mind, your brain below the ball so you can really hold it and bring it up. Those are the kind of concepts that they're talking about. I don't know. I know the last couple of games Wilson's been really good. For whatever reason, maybe they, according to these numbers, have not been so good. But then again, honestly, I've watched games where the scores have been good, and I'm saying, is it sometimes a result of who's umpiring? And I don't even know that. You break down umpires who are different calling left-handed pitchers and right-handed pitchers and then versus left-handed batters and right-handed batters. Just watch. You'll see the difference in strike zones based on handedness by the pitcher. So all these things come into play. I don't know, but I do know I love Wilson and Caratini, and whatever shortcomings they may have right now, I'm certainly going to work through them in the future.
So what's the difference, you know, if you've mentioned the mindset of guys kind of bringing pitches back a little bit, getting lower than the pitch, there's got to be a difference then for Wilson and for Victor when they're catching a guy like Chatwood or you, Darvish, that have all that kind of movement versus a guy like Jose Quintana or John Lester, I would imagine, who are looking for that pitch at a very specific point. They're much more, I would imagine, command guys than perhaps the other two we're talking about here. What is it that Wilson and Victor have to do differently between, you know, two halves of your pitching staff then?
Like you're saying, catch Kyle Hendricks every day.
Yeah.
And they'll look really good. I mean, obviously, Tyler's had trouble with the zone, and for whatever reason, Quintana has had more trouble recently, and so have you. I mean, so it could just be the function of the command of our pitchers right now, too. You know, sometimes when you're missing a lot, then umpires tend to not give you a strike. And when you're dotting up, the umpires tend to give you a strike. I know yesterday's game, I was a little concerned with the bottom of the strike zone. I started yelling out, he's a young umpire. And when we go back, you find out that maybe two or three could have been called strikes. And if you look at the way Victor caught the ball, it was pretty darn good. So there's a lot of ambiguities involved in all this that I really, all these, the zone metrics to me are really, I'm not totally bought into all that stuff yet, even when it comes to measuring shortstops and center fielders and their ability to cover ground. A lot of times in the infield, some of it has to do where you position them there originally, mm-hmm. in regards to them getting to more balls or looking better. Soft contact makes defenses better. So with the catchers, I haven't studied it as well, quite frankly, because haven't seen it as that big of a deal. I think with our pitchers, our starters in general, and even our bullpen guys, we have a tendency to miss, and I think sometimes it can be impacted by that.
So a week ago, you were calling out the lineupistas, as you put them, the people obsessed with the order in which the players are deployed. And then it just so happened we saw a leadoff man roulette and various names at the top. Are you trolling?
No. I try to explain that. It's just a matter of who's available to us that day. When Zobrist is playing, and like the other day, I think I put Tommy on the top because of their pitcher. Wanted Tommy to play, then here's what you got to do. Look down the whole group, and then you place these guys. We don't have one leadoff hitter. I'm looking for a guy that's going to get on base multiple times, hopefully, based on that starting pitcher who you should see probably at least three times in a normal game. So who's going to have the best chance to get on base for Bryant, Rizzo, and Contreras? That's what we're trying to do. We're setting up the dance floor. And then after that, Javi has ascended. There was a time Javi was, either home run or nothing. And so I wanted him in the 8-hole because of that reason. But now he's starting to move the baseball in all kinds of situations. And I want him in a more prolific spot and an RBI spot, because I promise you, this guy's fearless. He don't care. I mean that in all the positive ways. So that's why he's moved up. Schwarber has done a nice job in that 5-6 slot. And then, just who's going to hit 7 and 8? So it's not as convoluted as people are trying out to make it out to be. You just look at who the other pitcher is. We don't have one leadoff hitter. We don't have Ricky Henderson, okay? So then who's ever playing that day, try to match his talents up. And then again, get those most at-bats versus that starter. And then if there's a need to pinch hit or change defense, like we did yesterday at the end of the game with Tommy, it's there for you. So that's all it is. We just don't have the legitimate or typical number one leadoff hitter.
Joe, last week when we talked, it had been a couple of issues defensively for the squad. I wonder how you feel about last week's worth of defense, an issue here or there, a base running mistake here or there, which I'm sure you put in a different bucket. But even still, there are a couple of things that I'm sure you're looking to clean up here this next week.
Yeah, we were not as clean on defense as we need to be, not most of them. I think for the most part, they're more mental than physical. We're better than that. We can't make, like even yesterday's game, we made a couple mistakes. And of all days that I find out that we lead the National League in another one of these analytics base running category, we're in top. And then we make two or three mistakes over the last 2 days. Listen, you're not going to be an oil painting every night. Of course, these guys are not robots. Of course, we're going to make mistakes. What we do is we coach, man. Our coaches do a great job of prep every day. These guys get feedback after the moment also. I got coaches coming in my office all the time. I have meetings with the coaches to talk about specifics and individuals. I mean, every guy requires different kinds of attention. So this goes on constantly. 162 games, there's a lot going on. So, yeah, we did not play our typical defense. I put it on the painting, Renaissance Chick Stick, the defense, 27 outs, let's go. And that's what we got. When you're playing and you're only giving another team 27 outs, our pitchers got to do a better job of getting ahead in counts, getting deeper in the game as starters, and then all of a sudden your bullpen gets the proper rest. These are the formulas. It's not rocket science. We just have to simplify. We have to play the game more consistently well in order to get out of this where we have games that we should have won that we don't. just based on some mental mistakes.
The other thing that happened is the Braves all of a sudden got good. This looks to me like a legitimately good baseball team right now. I don't know how they're going to finish, but if people have never heard of Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna and some of these young pitchers, that the National League is different when you look at the schedule and you say it doesn't look like it used to look.
No, they're going to keep getting better. They got more on the way. They are. They got a nice bullpen. The kid Carl came in yesterday, did a really nice job. We had a chance. I think Vizcaino, their normal closer, had pitched 2 days in a row. It looks like they weren't going to go three. So Minter comes in, and heck, we almost took advantage. I mean, there's a great play. Their double switch, their third baseman, Carmona, I think it was, he made a great play to start it off against Baez. So they did. They actually won that game on defense, I thought, yesterday. Albies. I mean, this guy, I mean, I don't know, him and Pedroia, which one's taller, but they're both, this kid is definitely an MVP caliber player eventually. I've not seen enough of Acuna yet. Freddie Freeman and Marquez are at the top of their games right now. And go on and on. I mean, but Bautista, you know, maybe the ball's one data, but nevertheless, he's very, very dangerous. They got a lot of stuff going on, and I like their arms. I think their manager does a great job. He's been around a bit. So they're a team definitely to watch.
You did something pretty cool, I guess, this morning, Joe, talking with the kids at St. Rita's, the baseball team there. I guess it was a Skype conversation. Do Simple Better is the hashtag. Kind of cool to touch into some of the youth baseball teams and let them know what's up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've really been putting that out there. I've been trying to get more groups to do it. I want my players to get interested and involved in it. The ability to make an impact from a hotel room in Atlanta in the morning, drinking a cup of coffee, doing your lineup, and then maybe go for a workout, whatever. I mean, there's this downtime when we're on the road that could be filled very easily. It's hard for us to get to these schools during the season. Like, so we play every day and we play a lot of day games. But technologically speaking, I don't think we utilize that to our greatest advantage in regards to making an impact. This is a program I've been wanting to get going. I got a couple more classes to do the rest of this week. I don't have the list in front of me, but today St. Rita's was the first. I want to continue this program. I think I got Georgetown University lined up, I think, for the fall. I think it's a journalism class, and that's the other part. I like to do journalism classes, too, or any kind of a leadership group. This is to me, how you attract young fans. This is how you make an impact, technologically speaking. I'd like to see MLB get more involved in something like this. I mean, the outreach is incredible, what we can do in a very limited there's limited calorie burn on our part. I mean, you sit in front of your iPad or whatever, and you talk to a group, and you answer some questions that can make a difference. I had a great time. It was really, really well organized. The kids had great questions, and I really had a great time doing it.
And people should keep in mind that Joe's Respect 90 main event is May 25th at Wintrust Grand Banking Hall. The buffet dinner, cocktails, scotch tastings, amateur boxing with Joe and players and coaches. You want more information on that, you can visit Cubs.com or Respect90.org for details and to purchase tickets. Joe, thanks as always, and good luck.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.